Hollywood files have been activated. Enjoy the show.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to start this week by welcoming back Lee Shackelford. Mr. Shackelford, how are you?
I am well, very well indeed. I've got some stressful things going on in my personal life, and it just makes me crawl on my hands and knees to when I get to hang out with the two of you and discuss Who, including Doctor Who, Torchwood, sub-universe. So here we are.
Indeed. Here we are. And here we are, Mr. Brown, Clarence Brown. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy to come on the show as we all come together on the show.
Are we going to do cum jokes for an hour?
This has made, let me say it one more time.
I got it.
This has made my day because of all three of us. You, my friend, were the one
what you're talking about.
Who I least expected to make that joke.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. Okay. Maybe
it's tea time here.
But it's even an more important time.
Not on Torchwood.
But it is an even more important time because if we were to go back when we normally record Discussing Who, which would have been yesterday, it would have been someone's, I don't know, maybe birthday, Clarence Brown?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm old. Thank you for pointing that out for me.
25 is not old. Come on.
I wish. Wish I was a quarter
century.
Since
both of us are older than you.
Yeah, exactly.
You can turn that down if you want to. Yep.
With all seriousness, though, happy birthday. Glad you're here tonight. Hope you had an awesome birthday and wishing you the best for the year to come. Cheers to you.
Yeah.
Thank you, kind sirs.
You're welcome.
We're glad you were born.
Indeed. And glad that you put up with the two of us on a weekly basis.
They're perks. It's a perk, man. It's good. It's a feature.
Indeed.
When Grace in the chat says, enjoy your first legal drink.
Got to ask you, Lee Shackelford.
Yeah.
If we have someone watching or listening for the very first time, what do you like telling people?
I like saying, heaven knows you got other things you could be doing, possibly better, more constructive things. But we appreciate the fact that you've chosen to spend this time with us, just discussing Who. So thank you very much.
All right. And Clarence, you have something you also like telling people.
Yeah, I'd like to say join us aboard the TARDIS. Join us. You can support the show by subscribing, leaving a review, telling a friend. If you have anything you want us to know, you can send that in to discussingwho@gmail.com or at discussingwho on any and all social media.
And before we move on, I do want to give a quick shout out to our friends Tasha from After the Snap Movies and TV. And of course, Windgrace, both are in the chat. Both are on YouTube. So those two channels, the Windgrace Project and After the Snap Movies and TV, check them out. Please give them a subscribe and always love having them in the chat. So thank you. Thank you both for being here. So guys, do you have any other things before we move on? Any other news or anything you want to bring up before we move on?
Not for me.
Nothing at all, sir.
All right. Well, that means that I get to say, for anyone watching or listening, if you have not seen Day One, which is the second episode of the first series of Torchwood, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Affirmative.
Spoilers.
Spoilers? What spoilers?
And I killed Sparky too.
Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out and we are back to review Day One. Day One is the second episode of the first series of Torchwood, airing on BBC Three, like the preceding episode, on the 22nd of October, 2006. Clarence Brown, it's your birthday, so I'll start with you.
You know, man, my plan was to conjure up a Macho Man Randy Savage voice when I said this, but I didn't want to blow out everybody's ears, so I decided against that. But I wanted to say, what are you going to do when the purple sex cloud monster comes for you? And that pretty much sums it up for me.
That's it. I thought that was Galactus. Mm-hmm.
Well,
okay. Lee Shackelford, what say ye?
Well, as I was quick to point out to Kyle in chat later on, I hadn't seen this episode, I think, since it aired. And so I was just kind of watching it with my mouth open because one of my guilty pleasures is a very strange little film from 1982, made in the U.S. by a Russian crew, believe it or not, called Liquid Sky. And the audacious plot of Liquid Sky is that an alien entity comes to Earth and possesses a young woman and turns her into a nymphomaniac because the aliens love the experience, the taste, if you will, of the human endorphins released during orgasm. But the downside of this is that her people, her lovers die when they climax. So, and someone in the film makes the joke that that means that they come and go at the same time. So is Chibnall aware of Liquid Sky?
He has to be.
Did he think that maybe nobody would know or connect it? Or, I mean, it is kind of an obscure film, is Liquid Sky, but anyway, so I enjoyed this episode, but I just kept thinking, man, this is Liquid Sky. So whatever.
You know, I'm like you, Lee. I've watched this one time before this. You know, I've watched Torchwood through once, enjoyed Torchwood through once, and never went back and revisited them. That said, I knew that there were adult themes coming, but this, to me, being the second episode out of the, you know, out of the canon or whatever you want to say, it firmly said, this isn't Tea Time Doctor Who. You know, this is not, even in regards to how maybe TV has changed since 2006 to 2024, this is still not Tea Time Doctor Who. Clarence, you look like you're thinking something.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah, and I wonder, have our collective television watching thoughts changed over the past 20 years? Because I think if I had saw this when it came out, maybe I would have been like, oh, wow, they're really going going at it in this show. But as I watched it now, I feel like, huh, that was tastefully done. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we
it's all relative, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, my wife and I were watching something on TV the other night, and we was interrupted by a commercial for a razor designed to shave your pubic hair. And it was practically, well, it really was. It's demonstrated in the commercial.
Okay.
And she and I just sort of looked at each other across the room like, well, that happened. you know, and we're old enough to say, can you imagine that commercial being on network television? And,
they would, you know, ban TV.
But if you think about it, even in a different, well, this is in a different context, but in the same region, I should say. But I can remember watching soap operas as a kid, and there would be advertisements during soap operas because predominantly women were who watched soap operas for feminine products of whatever, you know, type of feminine product there might be. So yes, this may have been a little bit more graphical, but this was, if you didn't know what those feminine products were, you wouldn't understand the commercial, but still it was what it was. You know,
well, for a lot of us, that was very educational. You said, oh, okay, I didn't know that. Well, now I know.
So let me ask this question based off of what we're talking about. Is there room in sci-fi as a genre for adult theme programs like Torchwood or more adult themes? Or should everything be family friendly? Is there room for adult theme content sci-fi?
Wow, I would say emphatically yes. Harlan Ellison always preferred the term speculative fiction, you know. And if you're going to say that, then it means that there are no borders, no boundaries, and no no ceiling. You have to be able to go anywhere and explore anything. And if we're going to put massive violence, for one thing, off the table, which nobody has ever suggested, or you know, exploring every aspect of human sexuality, then, you know, why in the world would we rule that out?
Yeah, I totally agree. And if we go back to the 70s, and I'm just now kind of getting caught up on some of these things like Logan's Run and Barbarella. And there was even like a Jane Fonda movie I was watching on Tubi where she was on some planet, but it was all kind of sexploitation stuff, but in space. So I don't
know. That's Barbarella.
Yeah. I don't know if it was looked at as being, we can do space stuff now, so let's just do our risque stuff in space, or they were trying to be progressive. In some ways, I think they were, especially on Logan's Run when it was sort of like Tinder before we had Tinder. But it's interesting. I think as long as, in the context of Doctor Who, as long as it's separate, it's loosely connected own thing. And we know this is on a different, I forget which BBC channel this originally aired on, but it was
BBC Three.
Yeah, so it was kind of around other adult-oriented shows. And I was thinking to myself, man, this is well-produced. Although a Monster of the Week show, it's well-produced like a regular, it looks like a regular television show in a lot of ways. But, you know, I think the room to explore that is definitely done interestingly here in this show.
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys said. My original version of this question was, I wanted to ask, if you had to choose, which would your preference be, adult content or regular content? And I was like, nah, if I put it that way, and I say, well, I'd rather have adult content that could come off sounding like, oh, well, you pervert.
Yeah. But, or is it adult content, or is it just sci-fi that has no bounds?
That's when, a good point.
When you put a show on HBO, they take all the restrictions away. Sort of like I know Tasha was talking about it on her channel about the show Evil. It first aired on CBS over the air, and you know, they kind of played by the rules. But as soon as it moved to Paramount Plus, according to her, I haven't seen it myself. According to her, they kind of just went crazy and did everything, start cussing like a sailor. So yeah, I think there's room for both in the right context.
Yeah. You know, my only thing with that would be, and, you know, I'm with what I'm about to say, it's all in perspective, because some of the arguments that I've heard about this current season of Doctor Who could fall into this perceptive, because they may not have liked certain aspects of said content. You know, if I watch something on HBO, like what you said, Clarence, I have a expectation that if I see something, whatever that is, man or woman or whatever they're doing together, woman, man, whatever, is I'm watching HBO. You know, that's kind of a given. Yeah. If I'm watching Disney Plus and I'm watching a Marvel movie, that may be a little bit more, or whatever, or if I'm watching a Disney Cinderella something, I'm not expecting an adult-oriented Cinderella from Disney, you know.
Unless it's an adult Cinderella.
but not
on Disney, though.
Yeah, but you get, you know, it goes back to where you're getting the content. But I think there's room for everything just within knowing where it's at and knowing where to find it and all of that good stuff. So that
being— at some point, I wanted to bring up something about making this episode. And in the chat, Wingrace has pointed out that the first episode of Stargate had full frontal because Showtime demanded it. And that is very much a reality of the streaming universe that there are. And it has always been this way. Certain movie studios would say, you know, would mandate to actors, you're going to do this. And so you had to have opt-outs in your contract. Say, I don't do full frontal. I'll do dorsal. You know, so I would show my butt, but that's, you know, and so a lot of times, you know, we have a nude scene in it. And so we, what happens is your body double comes in for it and so on. And part of what I was thinking about this episode is this terrific performance from Sarah Gregory, who's playing Karis, that it is, she's got to be completely committed to everything she's doing, and all of her energy has to go into it. So when she's being possessed and when she is feeding on these guys, it's got to be carnivorous. It's got to, you know,
yeah.
She can't hold back. It ruins the whole effect. And now on stage and on screen, you would have somebody on set who is the intimacy director. Mm. And I was watching the closing titles this time for exactly this. If there's an intimacy director on this episode, they're not credited. Mm. So this may have been before that time. But, you know, as time has gone by, more and more actors have sort of stood up and said, hey, I'm not really comfortable with this.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's in my contract. I know this is good for my career. I know everybody wants to see my titties, but I'm just not comfortable with the way we're doing it. And so you have somebody on set who's going to be there to make sure everybody's okay, you know, with what's happening and how it's being done. And if they're not, then you find another way to do it. And so the intimacy director has a tremendous amount of creative control on the movie sets and stage plays too. That's all happened pretty recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I was watching this thinking, are any of these guys that she's jumping on, are they, I'm talking about the actors, are they at all uncomfortable with this? You know, everybody seems to be fully committed, and it's, you know, it's easy to imagine that if you're getting paid for this, you just go with it. But that's not true. People have limits. They do.
Yeah.
And everybody's are different. So we try to, as professionals now, we try to accommodate for that. So, I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, that's why I kind of felt like there, although the actor, Sarah Lloyd, was going for it, she definitely was going for it. I did feel like still there was a semblance of tastefulness, because, you know, the nudity we saw in this episode was from Owen, you know.
That's true.
So no real nudity. in that aspect, and, you know, the scenes were really up close and personal, but it wasn't to the point where I was like, oh, wow. You know, I feel like they did a pretty good job of making it believable, yet not too, you know, risque.
Yeah. 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 You could make this exact story and for it to just be gross.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Easily. Really?
Yeah. And, yeah. And it's, you know,
they did a good job of, I'm just going to say it what it is. They showed enough skin to add to that adultness of it, but mm-hmm. they didn't add enough scene, I will say, to make, as you guys said, make it too much or make it too much over the top. And I want to bring in a comment that Tasha says. She says that in the show Euphoria, Zendaya might be the only character who hasn't been nude on screen, and the assumption is she must have a clause, possibly.
And being a star of her power, she's in a position where she can do that. She can just say, my contract is a flat no. So
I want to stay on the alien character and the actor who portrayed the human / alien. And one thing that really stood out to me, and it reminded me of these actors playing split personality characters.
Yes.
She did an awesome job of, you immediately knew when it was the alien and you immediately knew when it was the human. You guys agree? Thoughts?
Yeah, I was looking for that moment because I knew that sooner or later we would hear the alien speak using her voice. And it's when she's locked up, of course, and she talks directly to Gwen. And I thought, are we going to hear a different voice? But what she did was she changed her demeanor.
Yes.
Rather like we saw Clara do in one of the Zygon shows. She just stood differently. She held herself differently. And I thought it was terrific. And it didn't need to be more than that.
Mm-mm. No. What do you think, Clarence?
Yeah, totally agreed. I think the moment that maybe jumped out to me the most was when she was going up the lift and Jack was kind of trying to get the hand back. I really noticed it then. And just a credit to the actor, just the toll of embodying this symbiote alien, whatever you want to call it, you could see it, especially when she was at home with her father. She was just so dejected and weighed down by the world. And, oh, man, I felt everything on her face in that moment. Mm.
So why did you guys think the alien chose her?
Didn't it say he read her thoughts? Didn't they say that in the episode?
At least I got that impression that the moment we saw her being taken over, she was angry at a man who had done her wrong.
Yeah.
And we learn later her mind is full of revenge. Mm. So maybe that's what the entity is looking for.
Mm. Yes. Sometimes heightened emotions and then, you know, sexual contact, heightened and sexual contact may produce, as far as the alien is concerned, a more absorbing, more stuff to absorb, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Maybe so, yeah.
You know.
After watching it again, I was thinking the alien would also have to choose someone of whatever species they're inhabiting who has in their mind that they know that they're sexually desirable.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't pick somebody that nobody's going to have anything to do with.
So let me ask this question based on that. And this was one of the things that was, I don't know, I won't say stood out to me or was interesting, but it caught my attention. So we see that the vampiric nature or the whatever nature of the absorbing happens during intercourse. Okay, we get that. But when she was having the seduction moment with Gwen and then realizes, oh, you're not a male, well, and then stopped, I didn't quite understand unless the biology was needed to have that happen, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I guess
is
so.
Is that what we're to assume there?
That's the way I read that. But in the same moment, we're thinking, well, then Gwen is really getting into it. That's a bit of a surprise. And then we learn that part of the thing is this sort of exuding basically an aphrodisiac, and that's what Gwen's responding to.
Yes.
Or so she says.
Or so she says. Yeah. All right. So I want to talk about Gwen for a second. Let's switch off of the alien and go to Gwen. So seeing that Gwen is the introductory character, we're in two episodes now. Lee, how are you liking Gwen so far? Do you feel connected to her yet?
Now, I just love Gwen. And it's great that the first episode uses her as our entry point to Torchwood, that we literally follow her down into Torchwood 3. And we learn things as she learns them. And in this episode, we learn that the rest of the team feel like they're outsiders too, because they don't know, they can't figure Jack out. And I'd forgotten about that. So they're welcoming her on board. Like, hey, you're a cop. Tell us what you can figure out about this guy. Cause we're clueless. And I love her and Ryan together so much. And I want them to be okay. I want their relationship to be okay. I want him to be okay. But, you know, we've already seen that these kinds of, you know, being with the doctor is hard on you. Being in Torchwood is going to be hard on you. And you have to worry for Gwen and Ryan. But I'm just so drawn to her. And she just seems like such a good, honest, moral person who's capable of error and wants to make it right. In this case, she literally says, this is all my fault. I will make it right.
Yeah.
She can't possibly keep that promise, but she says it anyway. Yeah.
Just real quick on what Lee said about the mystery of Jack, that does seem like that's going to be a through line throughout the season. So I'm sure we're going to get more of that. But let me say, as far as Gwen, I love Eve Miles. She's amazing. And as we watch more of this, I'm remembering that's one of the reasons I really, really love the show, because she's just a magnetic actor and portrayal of this character in Gwen. But I do like how, at least in this episode, and I guess a little bit in the first episode, how Gwen is kind of playing good cop. And she is kind of turning into the moral compass of the group, in a sense. It seems like they've been doing it so long, they've kind of have either become accustomed to what's going on, lost a little bit of heart around the humanity of what's going on. So I love her in that position of good cop. You know, where did you get that software? You have every face in the UK in a computer. You can't do that. That's great stuff there. And she continues to question Jack. And in the midst of that, I feel like there's an awesome thing of Jack just giving her a little bit back, say, well, what do you think about that? Well, how can we change that? Well, how would you do this? Every time they did it in this episode, I just smiled a little bit because I thought it was really, really well done.
Mm. You know, to me, this is an example of you can have a good actor, a great actor, and they be cast for the wrong role and it not work. And you can have a great actor who is cast for the right role and it really works. And I think she's the latter. She's a solid actor who was cast for the right role, and she embodies that character, and it feels natural. You know, all the casting to me feels natural. That, you know, they did a very good job in casting, but she particularly gives you that sense of, at the same time, insecurity, but with strength. You know, she seems genuine in her character. She doesn't feel like, well, I'm just saying the lines. I'm embodying the character. Because think about it. She seems so familiar to us in 2024 because how many times have I seen Journey's End? I've lost count. So just with Journey's End, I've seen Gwen Cooper hundreds of times, you know, so she's in my brain. But seeing how she was formed as a character is really fun, going back and watching and seeing Gwen not quite be the Gwen that we see in Journey's End, you know, that's kick ass and take names, where she's still learning and getting her feel of everything.
Yeah, does he use a gun yet?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So let's, Clarence, you alluded to this. What did you guys think about this exploration of Jack? Because I'll go ahead and answer my question first. It's hard for me to remember when I didn't realize that Jack was immortal. But what was the kind of the shocker or the wake-up moment was the realization when we're watching Torchwood at this point on October the 22nd, 2006, we didn't know yet that Jack was immortal. We didn't know that Jack couldn't die. We just know that at the end of the first series, he died and was resurrected. Mm-hmm. That's it.
And was left on a space station millennia in the future.
Yes.
How did he get here?
So what are your thoughts of, and Lee, why don't you take this one first? What are your thoughts of this exploration of mystery behind Jack?
There's plenty to explore. And I think that's one of the great things about the creation of this series, is building it around somebody who is has so much mystery, who likes to talk about himself, likes to talk about his past, but it's all the trivial things. It's all the, he likes to make jokes and you're not sure if he's kidding or not. As we get to know him, we'll think, no, that's actually true. You know, what's his joke that he makes about Karis going back and basically killing her old boyfriend with sex? That Jack says, you know, if I tried to go through my back catalog, we'd be doing it until the sun blew up. You know?
And with Jack, that's true.
And as we'll find out, that's probably true. So, but yeah, at this point, we don't know what to make of that. What is he talking about? That's just fun. It's just built up so that we can spend a lot of time trying to unpack things. He's not going to volunteer the truth. So we have to follow all the threads and see if we can solve it ourselves. That's fun.
Mm. Clarence, what do you think? You actually brought this topic up. So what do you think?
I feel like the show so far in these two episodes is fulfilling its mission, or it's accomplishing whatever the mandate is in my mind of this being a spinoff. What do you think of a spinoff, especially in this case on another network, probably a little later at night, more risque? All the touchstones with Jack so far have made me want to go back and watch or go and look up and research the connections. And you probably could watch it and not care, but how could you watch it and not care?
That hand is important to me. Drive it. What?
Just excellently done in that aspect of that's what you want this show to do. You want it to trigger people to go back and what? I need to know more. I need to know more.
Yeah. Whose hand is that? Why is that hand important?
I was just thinking about that today, that I, in what amounted to a social media world back then, I remember other fans saying, well, why does he have a hand? You know, and then somebody saying, I think that's the 10th Doctor's hand from, you know, and other people saying, well, that's impossible. I mean, it was dropped, you know, from a mile in the sky over London.
And the brilliance of that is how that hand that lives in this series comes back to Doctor Who proper for a tie-in spoiler alert, you know, that totally ties into a future Doctor Who story of a hand that lived in Torchwood for seasons.
And also on the Jack mystery, he makes Karis glow in this episode.
Yes, he does. Like,
oh, is he holding back residual Bad Wolf Heart of the TARDIS time vortex energy inside his body? What is even going on right now? Mm-hmm. So again, it made me go look at my research more stuff.
Well, and it's early enough that you wonder, is this going to happen every time he kisses somebody?
Right.
You know?
That's cool stuff, man.
Yeah. But and since we're talking about that moment, too, it was actually in my notes. The hats off to John Barrowman. That I think it's easy for people to dismiss him as an actor because he's such a pretty boy. But that just watch his face during that whole tussle with Karis over the hand in the jar, because he really does not want to hurt her, but he knows that he may have to. If he has to choose between her and the hand, and he doesn't want to,
he's talk to the hand.
He's going to tell her, talk to the hand. But it just, it's all in his face, this internal anguish. He does not want to be in this situation, but here he is, and he's got to act on it. It's just, And then she throws the jar.
So I've got to ask this question. Even though we know the hand is okay, did either of you kind of have whenever the hand got, the jar got broke, because it was like, oh, no, that's the doctor's hand.
I didn't remember that, yeah.
Yeah, he cradles it like it's dead.
And it moves, yeah.
Yeah, it's so...
That was so cool. So I want to ask you guys about Owen, Tosh, and Ianto. How do we feel we know them yet? You know, I ask how you guys were liking Gwen, but how about these three? Do you feel like this series and these last two episodes are exploring them? Do you feel like you're starting to know them as the characters or not?
I feel like we are, and I hope I'm not remembering too much in the future, but to me, Owen is probably the biggest wild card. Because at every turn, he's breaking the rules. Of course, they all were breaking them in the previous episode. But he just seems like he's just there for the fun. And, of course, he's a doctor, so he's there for the research, too. But he seems to march to his own beat a little bit. But the other two, I think, are pretty much what I've expected so far. They seem pretty much by the book so far.
Lee, what do you think?
I was actually watching this episode thinking about this very thing, that the way this is written and the way these performers play it is really, really canny for introducing us to them, for making us want to get to know them. And I contrast it with the last year of Discovery, where I started fast-forwarding through things as I was watching the last season, because I was thinking, all right, we all love each other. I get it. Everybody on this show loves everybody else. Can we please? And I'm usually not like that. But I just started getting tired of it. And in this episode, these people don't particularly like each other necessarily. They'll take a bullet for each other, but they don't get along. They have very different opinions. And I thought, that's brilliant. Let's give us a group of people who are going who may not be able to sit down and have a meal together sometimes because they're going to argue about something. That tells us that they have strong points of view and we want to know about them. And we get flashes of them even now. And as the series goes on, we're going to learn more about what it is that makes them different from each other in ways that they can't reconcile. Mm. I agree with Clarence. So the first thing we're getting is that Owen really does play by his own rules. And we've stressed already in these two episodes, we can't have people playing by their own rules down here.
Yeah.
He keeps doing it anyway. And you can't imagine Tosh being like that. Mm. So there you go.
What do you think, Clarence?
Agree. I went first.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I had forgotten. I think I had gotten so wrapped up with this realization that I just came to when Lee was talking that I'd forgotten that you went first. But here's my realization. I was sitting here thinking when you were describing how they were interacting with each other, Lee, and I was comparing it to Doctor Who, and I'm going to state it this way. We've heard the fourth Doctor introduce Sarah Jane Smith as, hello, I'd like to, you know, to introduce you to Miss Sarah Jane Smith. She's my best friend. And then we've heard the 15th Doctor talk about Ruby when he's talking to Rogue. And Rogue asks him, who is this person you were with? And he says, oh, she's my best friend. Mm-hmm. So the dynamic that we see on Doctor Who are the companions, yes, but these are people that there's a camaraderie and there's a friendship with the Doctor. What you just described here was, in all sense and purpose, work relationships. We may have people that we are friendly with at work.
Right.
But when we leave outside of work, do we interact with 99% of those people? No.
Yeah.
Luckily, Clarence fell into the 1% of that 99% for me. Yeah. But for the majority, you don't, you know, they don't enter into your personal realm. And right. I think that goes into what you are saying, Lee, is there's this kind of banter, bicker, banter, whatever, but in a professional way, because these people aren't friends, is what I'm going a long way around to say.
That's it. Yeah, at the end of this episode, they've all gone their separate ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, indeed. All right, so we've talked about the concept, we talked about the story, we talked about Jack and Owen, Tosh, and Yanto, and Gwen. I want to end by talking about our dear writer of this episode, and we know that we, particularly me, have a kind of a love-hate relationship with Chibnall. What are your thoughts on how he did in executing this story?
Interesting. I had no idea Chibnall wrote this.
Yeah.
Bum, bum, bum.
And that he was a co-producer of this.
Yes. Season.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I think it may... I enjoyed this story, and I think it may fall again in the category of what we were saying before about Chibnall, that he might have some pretty good writing, decent ideas, when it's given to somebody else to execute. You know, he's not in total control of everything. Maybe it works a little bit better. That's how I feel in this case. I never would have thought he wrote this, if I'm being honest.
Mm-hmm. All right, Lee, what do you think?
The same, exactly the same. I remembered that I really liked this episode and I was watching it again. That name jumped out of the opening titles to me and I said, okay then. Let's have a look at this. And then at the end, I said, I think that's really, really good. I think this is a really difficult story to tell, and it's tightly written, and there's little character moments in it that are unforgettable. And I just think, well, you know, Chris Chibnall, This is this is the Chibnall we know from Broadchurch.
Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, I preface...
Which will star Eve Miles at one point, by the way.
Yes, indeed. So, you know, I made a point of saying the love-hate relationship, but I'm going to go into the love part of the relationship with Chibnall because I loved it. I thought he did a great job. I didn't get bored. There wasn't all the things that I disliked about some of the things I've disliked in his other work that he's done. So, you know, I thought it was very good. And it even led me to say, okay, if he's writing the next one, so be it. I enjoyed this one. You know, I'm still going to have to pick at him a little bit. I can't help it, but I can, you know, be man enough to say, hey, you wrote it. I enjoyed it. Kudos to you.
Yeah.
You know, good job, because it was a good episode. So that being said, any other items before we get into our favorites?
A little bit of detail that I noticed right at the end there. I wonder who is responsible for this. It might be the kind of thing that would be in the script. It might be something that a set dresser would suggest. The director would say, oh, that's great. Let's go for it. Did y'all notice that we went to see Eddie, Karis's old boyfriend, who apparently is married, and she was thinking he was going to leave his wife. In the background of that whole conversation is a baby crib.
Mm. Mm.
And it just makes you think, wow, if I didn't hate this guy already. Wow. Okay. Anyway. And, you know, it's just a little detail. There's no dialogue about it or anything. It's just there. Like,
you could have saved yourself.
You've got a wife and a kid. Yeah. So, yeah, now he's a pile of dust. So,
He was dusty. I will say this, and I don't know what scene it was in, but there is some scene that there is a picture of the castle, I think, that was used in Tooth and Claw, where the Torchwood Institute was first mentioned. But I don't know exactly which scene it is, but FYI.
Interesting. All right,
Clarence, anything else from you before we get to favorites?
I feel like I thought the SUV scene was pretty cool. It was tight quarters, but no, they had the proper kit in there to impress. Mm. I thought that was pretty fun. I love the whole rat jam moment. Well, love is a strong word. I thought it was interesting, the whole rat jam moment. In a explicit, well, a straightforward way to identify what would happen to Karis if she did not get the entity out of her. I thought that was good. And also the callback to when Owen stole, well, he used the tech without his permission. Jack uses it at the end to trap the alien. So,
yes.
So good stuff all around.
All right. So, favorite scene. Clarence, it's your birthday. Go first.
My favorite scenes and favorite quote are centered around cameras, ironically. My favorite scene is when the group were watching Karis and Gwen make out. Owen is like, hello, happy birthday to me.
Just going to hit record here.
Yeah. Wow.
All right, Lee. What was your favorite scene?
Well, now I'm wondering, is there something wrong with us? That was my favorite scene too. And is it seeing Sarah Gregory and Eve Miles making out that I liked about that? Or just that it's funny
that
she is in the clutches of the alien who we know kills, and we don't know if she's going to be okay or not. But then there's still Owen just kind of grooving on it. And even when Jack says, we got to get down there, he goes, yeah.
They all just look at him like,
whoa. No, we really have to.
No, right now I'm going to hit record. Is that okay? I don't know. I did love that.
So I was going, and I'll go ahead and say this at up front. This was actually going to be my honorable mention if you guys didn't mention it. So I'm glad you did, because where you guys were focusing on him watching them, I was just focusing on the fact that all three of them were sitting there watching this going on. And I'm thinking, okay, she's about to get killed. And I'm like, okay, voyeuristic much?
A little bit.
But for me, my favorite scene was when the hand broke out of the jar and Jack's response to it.
Yeah.
You know, I got to go back to the doctor. And that was my tie to the doctor. So the hand scene.
I'm sure you caught the little bit of the 10th Doctor theme there.
Yes.
Yeah. I did not.
Yeah. Yep. So that, you know, regardless of what, the hand had a job to do. So, woohoo, that was my favorite scene.
Hey, we got hand job in there too tonight. Well done.
Breaking all the rules.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. So.
Well, all right then.
Well, all right. And that's all right then. All right. Favorite quote. And Clarence, still your birthday yesterday. I'm going to stay with you. Favorite quote.
I love the other security footage scene when they in the nightclub in the bathroom when they ask the security guard, how do you know? And they go there and they watch the video and they're just standing all around like, wow, my God, he's just came and went. Yeah. Jack interjects at the end.
Has to be said.
Yes. All right, Lee, favorite quote.
Well, mine is also a cheap joke from Jack. Put your trousers on and get out. It always breaks my heart to say those words.
Okay. So mine is also from Jack, but not one that's below the belt. It's literally took a higher road with this one. Nice. It was, remember this, when you're dealing with Torchwood, nothing is what it seems. All right, so final rating. For anyone in the chat, if you would like to give your final rating 1 out of 5, then please do so. We'll come back. But Clarence Brown, final rating, what say you?
I will give this 4.1 rat jams out of 5.
Okay. 4.1.
Yeah.
Lee Shackelford, what say you?
I completely loved it, so I'm giving it 5 Liquid Sky Imitations out of 5.
All right. So, okay. I'm going to give this 5 hands in a jar out of 5.
Yeah. Whoa, buddy.
So I really enjoyed it.
Watch your language.
And I love the fact, because I've been waiting to do this, thinking, oh, this is going to be such a dance to get around the innuendos and whatnot. And it has been, and it's been fun.
All right. Call this discussing who out the dark.
Indeed. Torchwood style. Yes. Yeah. All right.
I've been hoping that it goes without saying, right? If the, yeah. We're talking about Torchwood now. The kids may want to leave the room.
Cal, this is an opportunity to make your content warning bumper to put at the beginning of the episode.
That's true.
Spoilers and content warnings.
Yes.
Yes. That would be cool. I think I do. You're right. I think I need to have some kind of warning. You have now reached Torchwood. Mm-hmm. Explicit content. Coming.
Turning back.
All right. So we see from our friend Janet Hall. Welcome, Janet. She's giving it 3. Wynn Grace is giving it 4 redacted out of 5. Okay, then. That's all right, then.
Exactly. Wynn Grace doing their own censoring.
Yes, indeed. 4 redacted. Not retracted. Redacted.
Redacted, yes.
Out of 5.
Yeah, if only we had this purple sex alien during when Thanos had to kill half of the people. He could have just released this upon the masses, and then it would just took care of itself, you know. Dust it away.
Yeah, but it would only have been men.
Oh, good point.
Well, yeah.
Maybe that's for the better.
Yeah. Well,
then everybody would have been Wonder Women. So there you go.
And Tasha says, I'm just here for the ride. So,
okay. I see what you did there. What you did there, Tasha.
Oh, okay then. And that one, it gives the ultimate for the night, our friend Tasha. Right. That gives the ultimate. Well, that's all right then for the night. All right. So, gentlemen, any other things? This has been so much fun. Any other items before... we leave.
No, man.
Indeed.
Seeing Tasha here reminds me, I would encourage everybody who doesn't already know that you need to be listening to Discussing Trek, on which Tasha is often a brilliant and insightful guest, and all under the leadership of Mr. Clarence Brown.
Indeed, indeed.
And occasionally heaving out the anchor that is Kyle Jones. Pulling it down. And yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Indeed, indeed. All right. Well, Lee, I have to say one last thing before we go, because I've been meaning to say it every time I look at the backdrop. When you set up straight, you know, in your chair, and the way the image is behind your head, it looks like you're about to regenerate, because that looks like regeneration energy.
Ultron energy, yeah. Yes. Or either that, or I'm about to become a pile of dust.
All right, so I have to pick up a comment from our friend Wynn Grace to end the night with before I do our final closing. And Wynn Grace says, what a different type of toy maker this episode would have had.
Oh, boy.
And with that, we will be back. Yes, indeed. And with that, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.